This is Jaru Das. Good day to you all. I'm your host for this series of shows on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Today we've chosen the 42nd verse in the 15th chapter. 15th chapter is entitled, The Pandavas Retire Timely, and this is in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. I'll read the Sanskrit and then the English. Dritva hutva cha panchadvam taks chai katve juhun muni Sarvamatmani ajuhavid brahmanyatmanam avyaye. And over the page here, the English translation. Thus, annihilating the gross body of five elements into the three qualitative modes of material nature, he merged them in one nescience and then absorbed that nescience in the self, Brahman, which is inexhaustible in all circumstances. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, has written a purport for this verse. I'll read that. All that is manifested in the material world is the product of the Mahat Tattva Avyakta, and things that are visible in our material vision are nothing but combinations and permutations of such variegated material products. But the living entity is different from such material products. It is due to the living entity's forgetfulness of his eternal nature as eternal servitor of the Lord, and his false conception of being a so-called Lord of the material nature, that he is obliged to enter into the existence of false sense enjoyment. Thus, a concomitant generation of material energies is the principal cause of the mind's being materially affected. And thus, the gross body of five elements is produced. Maharaj Yudhisthira reversed the action and merged the five elements of the body in the three modes of material nature. The qualitative distinction of the body as being good, bad, or mediocre is extinguished, and again the qualitative manifestations become merged in the material energy, which is produced from a false sense of the pure living being. When one is thus inclined to become an associate of the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, in one of the innumerable planets of the spiritual sky, especially in Goloka Vrindavan, one has to think always that he is different from the material energy, he has nothing to do with it, and he has to realize himself as pure spirit, Brahman, qualitatively equal with the Supreme Brahman. Maharaj Yudhisthira, after distributing his kingdom to Parikshit and Vajra, did not think himself emperor of the world or head of the Kuru dynasty. This sense of freedom from material relations, as well as freedom from the material engagement of the gross and subtle encirclement, makes one free to act as the servitor of the Lord, even though one is in the material world. This stage is called the Jivan Mukta stage, or the liberated stage, even in the material world. That is the process of ending material existence. One must not only think he is Brahman, but he must act like Brahman. One who only thinks himself Brahman is an impersonalist, and one who acts like Brahman is the pure devotee. Krishna is called Sarva Karana Karanam in the Brahma Samhita. That means that everything is coming from him. All the variegated phenomenon that we see in this cosmic manifestation has one common source. The scientists talk about conservation of energy. That is actually a fact, but the theory is imperfect or incompletely explained because it doesn't explain where is that conservation, where is the point at which energy is conserved. The answer is that all energies are conserved or preserved in God. Just take an example. Within each one of us, we have an energy called anger. That energy is not always manifest. Sometimes anger manifests itself externally, but most of the time it is preserved within us. Similarly, earth, air, fire, water, mind, intelligence, and false ego, these are all energies of God, but they're not always manifest. During the period of non-manifestation of this cosmic universe, all those energies are preserved and conserved within the transcendental body of God. When the time of manifestation comes around, from the form and from the divine personality of Godhead come all the material universes. These universes combine together, but they're really nothing more than earth, air, fire, water, and ether combined in different proportions. So they're all coming from that one common source, and even though so much is coming from the Supreme Lord, He Himself, as the source, remains as He was before all those emanations. Every emanation from the Supreme Lord, such as this phenomenal world, is perfectly equipped as a complete whole. Take this Earth planet, for instance. There is enough food, there is enough raw elements to maintain not only the present population, but 10 times the population. Someone may protest, well, if that's the case, why are there starvation, why is there malnutrition in some parts of the world? The anomalies which exist on the face of the earth are not due to any insufficiency in the creation of God. God has given us an earth planet, and if we see it as the property of God, as if we see the entire earth as one nation, undivided, indivisible among God, and divide all the bounteous gifts of the earth planet equally, there will be enough not only for the present population, but many times more than the present population. The problem is that we've artificially divided. We've drawn a line along a riverbank or a mountain peak, and we've said, this is Mongolia, this is China, this is America, this is Canada, this is East Germany, this is West Germany, and created artificial distinctions between living beings. And in this way, in some parts of the world, some people are eating too much. They're dying from arteriosclerosis due to too much calorie intake. And in other parts of the world, people are dying due to malnutrition. So there's not a question that there's any lack of raw materials in the creation of God. It is a question that they're not being properly distributed. And the reason they're not being properly distributed is because there is a scarcity of God consciousness. There is no other scarcity, but there is a scarcity of God consciousness. It's hard for us to think of something as complete, because everything in this material world is incomplete, being a perverted reflection of the complete spiritual world. If you think that you have a bank balance of $1 million, we generally take that as being complete. But one day that $1 million will be zero. On the other hand, complete means that you spend as much as you like and there is still more. There's a story which illustrates the nature of spiritual completeness. One time a boy took instruction from a spiritual master. He was from a poor family, and his schoolmates were from much more affluent families than he. It's customary at the end of one's spiritual training in the Gurukul, in the ashram of the spiritual master, it's customary to give him a parting gift before one goes out into the world. The little boy knew that his schoolmates were going to give the spiritual master some very, very significant and costly gifts indeed, silks and jewels and wealth. And he went home and he asked his mother if his mother could provide for him also a suitable dakshin, the gift to his spiritual master. His mother said, "We don't even have food in the cupboard." What to speak of giving gold or silks or jewels to your spiritual master? I can't think of a single thing that would be worth giving him. The boy was crestfallen. He began to pray to Lord Krishna to help him out in this extremity. Lord Krishna appeared before him and gave him a cup of yogurt, simply yogurt in a clay pot, and said, "Give this to your spiritual master." On graduation day, one by one, the students came up. Some gave jewels, some gave gold, some gave a cow or two in charity. When it came time for this little boy to come up, he came and he gave his spiritual master a simple clay pot full of yogurt. The spiritual master knew the actual situation. He knew the nature of this pot, but just in order to set an example to the other students, he feigned anger. He said, "What? You've only given me this clay pot full of yogurt? This is certainly not worthy remuneration for all the instruction that I've given you over the years." He said, "This pot of yogurt is useless," and he upturned the pot and poured the contents of yogurt out on the ground. Meanwhile, the boy's schoolmates were all snickering. However, when the spiritual master upturned or uprighted again the pot of yogurt, he found that it was full of yogurt again. When he emptied the yogurt out and upturned the pot again, it had refilled with yogurt. As many times as the spiritual master poured the yogurt out of the pot, as soon as he would upright it, again it would fill with yogurt. In this way, everyone in that school got an idea of what is the nature of spiritual completeness. A spiritual gift is such that no matter how much you take away from it, it remains the same. It remains complete and full, eternally. Similarly, from the transcendental body of the Supreme Lord, by the result of his multifarious potencies, these phenomenal worlds become manifested. But in spite of manifesting so many millions and millions of planets and innumerable universes, the Supreme Lord remains the same as he was, perfect and complete, before all these manifestations and emanations. Even materially, take the sun planet, for instance. The sun planet is a material entity. It has been emanating light and heat in tremendous, inconceivable quantities since time immemorial. And even though it has been emanating such energy since time immemorial, the sun planet has not appeared to diminish in size. The sun planet is the same today as it was 1 million years ago. The nature of Parambrahman, the Supreme Absolute Truth, is that although millions and millions of emanations come from him, and although each one of those emanations is perfect and complete, the Parambrahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, remains as he was before. And he who is Brahman, a living entity who is, takes the position of Brahman, he is one who is meant to distribute this knowledge about God free of charge all over the world. There's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Kripana Pala Hetava. A Kripana is a miserly person. A miserly person is one who has money, but he doesn't want to spend it. And a liberal person is a man who has money, and he spends it. So a Brahman, or a person situated in Brahman realization, or a Brahman, is one who has knowledge of the perfectness and the completeness of God, and he makes it his business to engage in missionary work and distribute that knowledge free. On the other hand, there are the Kripanas, who have a wealth of spiritual heritage, who have scriptural treasures and spiritual masters, but they simply take it for themselves and they don't spread it all over the world. So our Krishna consciousness movement, we're making disciples, we're making people Brahmins, not simply to know for themselves, but to distribute from town to town to teach people how to know God. One should know God, and then this way, by knowing God, he'll learn to trust God. Otherwise, as much as you print in God we trust on our paper, and as much as we mouth it, it's simply an empty slogan. How can you trust a man before you know him? And most importantly, the president, the executive head of state, he must know God, because whatever a great man does, common men will follow in his footsteps. If the president of the United States does not know God, then the people will never have a chance to know him either. And knowing God is more than just being a card-carrying Baptist or a born-again Christian and going to church for 1 hour a week. It's something, of course, to know that God is great, but the Vedic literatures give the most scientific and elaborate exposition of how great God is. This material nature is Prakriti, and it will be wound up at the time of annihilation. It will go to Krishna. Take a spider, for instance. He comes to a place where there was nothing. He spins his web. The web remains for some time, but when the spider wants, he retracts the web into his abdomen and goes away, so that where there was originally nothing, in the end there is also nothing. So the energy comes out from Krishna, and the energy is eternal, but the energy is not always manifest. Sometimes it is manifest external to the form of Krishna, and sometimes it is retracted and it is conserved and preserved within the body of the Lord. Let's suppose, taking that further, that previous example a little bit further, let's suppose that the spider is eternal, but that the cobweb is not. This is described in Bhagavad Gita, Bhukta Mukta Praliyate. This material nature is coming and going. It is not always manifested. There is a time of annihilation. There will be a time when there's nothing manifest, there's nothing perceivable by the senses, but the energy is not lost. Because God is eternal, therefore his energies are also eternal, and so when those energies are no longer manifest and no longer composing the phenomenal world, they are wound up within the form of the Lord. So the Lord is the point of creation, the point from which everything else emanates, but people say that if everything is created, then God must be created also. The reason they say this is because of their conditioning. We have no experience of something which does not undergo the six material changes. Those six changes which everything material, everything from the insignificant microorganism up to the universe itself, goes through six changes, and those six changes are 1. Birth, 2. Growth, 3. Duration, 4. Reproduction, 5. Dwindling, and 6. Vanishing at last. Everything material has a point of birth, a point of death, and in between there's growth, duration, reproduction, and dwindling in that order. Because this is our condition, we cannot picture or imagine something which has no point of birth, no point of death, which never dwindles, which doesn't have to grow, and which in fact endures forever. We're a small spark having all the qualities of fire. God is Satchitananda. He's full of knowledge, bliss, and eternity. He's the full form, the reservoir of all knowledge, all bliss, and eternity. We're parts and parcels of him, just like sparks from a fire. We have all the same qualities of knowledge, bliss, and eternity, but we have them in a small quantity. A drop of seawater has the same chemical composition as the ocean, so in that sense it's qualitatively one, but a drop of water, you can't drown in it like you can in the ocean. Madhava Mukunda Mohana Murari. This philosophy is called Achinta Beta Beta Tattva, and it was expounded by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu 500 years ago in India. Achinta Beta Beta Tattva recognizes the oneness of God with His creations, but it also postulates that there is a difference in power, there's a difference in potency and value between the creation and the Creator. There is a school of philosophers akin to the Buddhists in India. They're called Mayavadis. They take the oneness. They take it that God is spirit, I am spirit, but then they conclude that I am God. They take the oneness and they overlook conveniently the quantitative difference. And this Mayavadism is the root of the present-day philosophy, I'm God, you're God, I'm okay, you're okay. It comes from this idea that we're one with God, but it overlooks the difference between ourselves as small, insignificant living entities and the Supreme Lord who created us. No one who is in perfect knowledge will ever say that he is God. In fact, we are so bold as to put forward that if a man says he's God, then turn the letters around and call him a dog. The body which I have right now is created by my own energy. They say that face is the index of the mind. You can tell a man's mentality by looking at his face. Rather, the mentality is what creates the face. If a man lives in prison for many years, he develops a criminal mentality, and that manifests on his face. As our bodily features, even in this life, are predicated by our mentality, similarly, our body in the next life is determined by the mentality which I create in this life. At the time of conception, a soul enters into a womb of a particular mother. He has a certain mentality, which is a carryover from his previous birth. And during the 9 months of gestation before birth, according to his prior mentality, he generates a certain type of nose, certain eyes, certain ears, certain type of body, certain set of senses, in order to continue the fulfillment of the plans which was interrupted in his previous life by cruel death. If in one life I work as a dog and develop doggish mentality, then my soul is put into the semen of a dog and injected into the womb of a female dog. So as my body is formed by the prior existence of the spirit soul and a certain mentality which is covering that spirit soul, similarly, picture the cosmic manifestation as the body of God and as being generated by the mind and the spiritual potency of the Lord. So we're running out of a little time, and I don't have enough time to expound upon any other points or to elaborate them, but let's just recapitulate what we've talked about here today. First of all, God is one. He's the source of everything. And the definition of God is that although He creates everything, He's not created by anything superior to Him. The Lord is self-created, and before the sun, the moon, the stars, the demigods, He existed. During the period of manifestation of all these different phenomena, it is He only who is maintaining them, and when they're all annihilated, they're wound up within His transcendental body. We should get a fixed idea of how God is complete, and it is our duty, having understand that, to spread it to other people so they may know God and to be able to place their trust in Him and thus relieve themselves from all the anxieties of a modern atheistic world. To To see oneself as being cut off from God or separated from God is the most hellish type of life. It's like a leaf which has detached itself from the tree. A leaf detached from the tree cannot get any nourishment, it cannot get any satisfaction. So to live in the illusion that we are separate from God or that there is no God is to impose upon oneself the most hellish kind of torturous mentality. Therefore, it is the duty of God-consciousness people not to just take the knowledge and hoard it for themselves, but to distribute it. And knowing that it is a spiritual treasure of knowledge, it will not in the distribution diminish the original stock. Rather, the more that we distribute it, the more we will find in our original stock. That's about all the time we have for today. This is Charidas thanking you for being with me as we discuss the great Srimad Bhagavatam.